And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. As promised, part two of our interview here with Mike Shy, who joins us from California. Mike, thanks for getting up early with me. I'm back on the East Coast. I was with at Hayden Lake last week, which you know everything about. And now I'm back here in Ponte Vedra. Hasn't stopped raining, but I'm excited for part two, my man.
Well, I appreciate you having me back. That's for sure. And I'm excited too, because a lot of times everybody wants to talk about how did all the things happen with Bryson. And yeah, you know, it really never gets into the golf swing as much as I would, you know, like it to be. And so I'm excited about today. That's for sure.
Yeah, I am too. You know, taking a look at golf swings, breaking it down with the coach, I think is always very interesting, not only for myself, but for the viewers as well. The coach speak is something that I think, you know, viewers out there don't get to see a lot. You know, they'll see breakdowns, but actually just kind of hamming and egg it and talking about the evolution of one swing, I think is always really interesting. And, you know, you go back to part one, we talked about what it's like on the inner circle coaching Bryson DeChambeau, as you have for many, many years. You were his coach back when he was very young, to winning national championships at SMU, to the U.S. Amateur, to wins on the PGA Tour. No one's been in that inner circle longer than you have. And you've also seen this really kind of evolution and change of Bryson's swing. I've been watching it. We've got some swings that we're going to go through here.
Sure.
And I think our viewers will see it as well. But just kind of putting a bow on part one, in coaching Bryson and coaching a tour player, just reminds me, Mike, of why I never wanted to go out there and be a coach to PGA Tour players, because you guys work hard and it can be difficult, right?
Yeah, no doubt. It's a shock to the system. That's for sure. I was totally unprepared. I know, excuse me. I think Bryson was, we all were. I mean, it was all new, and especially what Bryson did. It wasn't just your normal, you know, guy coming from the web or the Corn Ferry, whatever, you know, and working his way up and, you know, being kind of, you know, not seen or whatever out there to, you know, a superstar status like that. And,
yeah.
And, you know, from, you know, making tons of money to what requirements are, you know, not only that, I mean, you know, when a guy just comes on tour, you don't have quite the requirements. Like Bryson had just tons and tons of things that he had to do, interviews that he had to do, mm-hmm. Because he got eight exemptions, I believe it was the first year, had to be in pro-ams on Monday and mm-hmm. Wednesday. Now, that's not required of a lot of guys, and that he had to do that. So I was in shock, you know, I'm like deer in headlights. So, you know, I think we handled it the best we possibly could. And obviously he's been somewhat successful. So,
yeah, there's a lot of layers to you guys. I respect what you guys do. I just didn't really feel like I was completely wired for it. Had other interests, other skill sets that I wanted to pursue. But I tell people all the time, like, look, I know most all these coaches out there. These guys work their tails off, man. I mean, they are up in the morning. They are there late. Texts, phone calls. It really never ends. The ups and downs. Tour players are, you know, really pulled a lot of different ways. They're admittedly, most of them can be damn near psychotic. I mean, it's sure. just, it's a tough one. It really is, but I have a lot of respect for it. And I think it's interesting to talk about as we did in part one. If you hadn't listened to that yet, you need to go to take a look at part one last Tuesday with Mike Shy, talking about the inner circle of working with Bryson DeChambeau. Now this episode, part two, is going to be more technique based, the evolution of Bryson's swing. Again, no one has been in the inner circle longer than you have and has seen this transpire. And as we start putting these swings up, you will see the differences in Bryson's swing. And I want to start, Mike, with 2017. And I know you go back even before that.
Sure.
But as we look at Bryson's swing here in 2017, what were some of the key principles that you guys had worked on, say, college, USAM, into the early pro days, that were kind of the staples of Bryson's swing?
Well, and again, going back, let's say to 2012 or 11, when I've always been taught the golfing machine. I'm not an authorized instructor with a golf machine, but mm-hmm. I literally have been teaching, you know, out of the golf machine for 40 years. And so when I gave him the golfing machine, the book, I knew for him it was really important to start defining the motion, you know, not just, you know, haphazard, look at video, try to have our own kind of lingo. We needed a specific lingo. And so the golf machine was really key to that. So giving him that, letting him read that, you know, he's a voracious, you know, reader and studier, you know, especially things that he's passionate about, physics being one, now the, you know, then the golf swing, mm-hmm. you know, the golfing machine, just, it resonated with him extremely well. So that being said, it's like, okay, well, the golf machine's quite simple in my mind, that we pick, let's say 24 components. There's 144 variations to those components, you know, and in the back of the book, it actually gives you two models, a swinging version and a hitting version. And Bryson noticed when he was going through and, you know, he would actually, there was a blank slate and he started writing everything down. And one of the big things that he saw, and let me go back just from his, let's say his golf clubs and lie angle. When we, let's say at age 14, 15, his lie angle on his clubs were like 5 degrees flat. Now think about that for a second. Wow. So let's say a 7-iron was 50, let's say 58 degrees, right? Maybe even less than that at the time. And then he went to a 7-iron, let's say today it's 67, right? That's 10 degrees difference, quite a bit. And it's been as much as 60 or as much as 72. So, but what Bryson did when he looked, again, Bryson doesn't necessarily want to complicate things. He wants to simplify things. And so he saw something that said zero shift. And so when we, you know, he looked at my swing, I always liked my golf swing. And he goes, well, you're a triple shifter, you know? And I said, well, obviously you don't want to be that. So, he said, you know, we've always thought of impact and address should mirror one another. I've always kind of thought, why does there have to be? And I understand why there is a deviation from address, you know, to impact, you know, seeing the hands higher versus lower. You know, how the secondary lever system works. But I always felt like, man, common sense would be, how about we just return it where we started? And so I would always talk about that with Bryson. And then when he saw zero shift and that Homer Kelly actually wrote it into the model that he would prefer, it was like Bryson just lights went off. And so hands went immediately higher. We talked about, there's different terms for that, you know, zero shift. It's not one plane, by the way. Although in the end it was that. But when he saw that term zero shift, that he didn't have to deviate, multiple planes, let's say, it was like, man, this would be so much easier. And he started kind of thinking about that. Obviously the one length clubs came into an existence right about that time as well. We realized that doing what we were trying to do with a variable set of clubs was going to be very difficult. So the one length again was like, okay, this is a must for what I'm trying to do. And again, super easy question to ask, very difficult question to answer. I mean, I grew up when, you know, I saw Tommy Armour, you know, the company be obliterated when they tried to do one length golf clubs, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was all, you know, another journey that we, you know, you can find lots of information about that. However, from the golf swing perspective, you know, Bryson loved practice. I mean, hitting thousands of balls without changing a golf club, you know. And so I will say a funny conversation happened. This was right before we went to the one length golf clubs. And he goes, do you think my posture and swing changes from club to club? You know, and I went, you know, overall, I would say we would hope it wouldn't, but it, you know, probably does. I probably fought him on the other side that there's not a lot of change. Just, you know, your hands are going to maybe be a little different and so on. So he was pissed. He literally went, I'm going to go video every one of my golf swings. I'm going to show you I have 13 different golf swings, right? And so he did, went and videoed every one of them, you know, came back and he made me look at every one of them. We went to all the nuances of the difference between the wedge and the 9-iron, the wet, you know, 9-iron and the 5-iron and the driver and so on. He said, this is too hard, right? And so once the One Lane Club came into existence, it made his life so easy to literally hit 1,000 balls in one session and really feel like I don't need to go hit a 9-iron or a 5-iron. It's all the same. And so it made his quest so much easier in understanding what he needed to do, how he could contact, you know, the ball, how he could evaluate his golf swing, and then how his baseline would translate from club to club so easily.
So a lot to unpack there. I'm actually a big golfing machine guy too. And was kind of in a fortunate situation to work with, share an office with Chuck Evans for many, many years, spent time with Lynn Blake and Homer Kelly, a Seattle guy. And It was a fascinating book to get into. And you talk about this no shift, and you look at Bryson in 4 years, like his shaft very upright and his lead wrist, you know, is very almost a little unhinged, perhaps call it this way. It doesn't have a lot of angle this way.
Right. But so that dissipated quite a bit when he went to the bigger grip as well. So, you know, again, trying to gain face control was really important. And he was having some wrist issues because he had a really hardcore throw. When we threw the Jumbo Max grips on all of a sudden, and then again, he wanted to hold it more in his lifeline. You can't do that when you have a small grip. And so I put the medium on, of course, we immediately went to XL of the Jumbo Max, and that just made it so easy for him to, get rid of that super ulnar, you know, position to where it would look more level. And it wouldn't, it wouldn't hurt him. That's for sure. I mean, it immediately goes, I don't hurt anymore. I feel like I can control the face extremely well. And he never looked back.
Yeah. So there's level, right? Like I'm going to shoot a gun.
Yeah.
In a horizontal and then down.
Yep.
Right. And then up. So Bryson is more here. And then when you do that, now the right form can soften and that form gets more on the same plane as the shaft.
Right.
And that's where you start taking out that, if I start down, now it's got to raise, you start changing that. And that's where Bryson is very different. Carl Pedersen was like that, a player. And then Mo Norman, of course, up in Canada had that. He would really be up here and get that right form underneath.
Right. And Bryson, I mean, idolized Mo, you watched hours of Mo and we went down that road a bit and it wasn't working. He was suffering some back problems and so on. And so Mo obviously was much more in his lateral movements, no rotations. Mm-hmm. We went completely the opposite and became all about how his body rotated. And which leads me to, I'm a big body track. I love, body track and shifting and how the center of mass moves and all that. But Bryson totally disproved what everybody was saying, which is you had to have a right to left shift. His dot, his center of mass literally didn't move. And yet he hit it very, very well. Mm-hmm. And that threw everybody off. We can't do that. I mean, Kwan looked at it and goes, no, you can't do that. I mean, I Kwan being the king of maybe of understanding biomechanics, I guess.
Right.
I mean, there's a number of guys out, but he was definitely about body movement and so on. In fact, he told Bryson, he said, you need to be more like Grant Waite, and that was at a time, I think it was his sophomore year, freshman year, whatever, when that happened. And Bryson thought he had to change. And so that was a rough couple of weeks until Bryson, I would prefer guys like that would look at you as a sample, as a study, because you are doing things that are different that people are saying shouldn't work. And yet you're one of the best college players in golf. So in college and one of the best amateurs. And you hit it, you can hit it on a rope, literally. I mean, straighter than anybody I've ever seen. And at that time, that's what he was really trying to do. I want to hit it dead straight. I want to be known as the straightest guy ever in golf, And so on. And so it was really good. It made him again, I always say this about players, own what you do. And that was a test for Bryson, that he had to really understand that I'm either owning this or I got to change. and he owned it. He decided, I am owning this 100%. And then there was nothing stopping him at that point.
You look at his stats, like 2017. In 2017, he hit it 306 yards.
Yeah, it wasn't short.
No.
I find it difficult, doing what he's doing now, and we'll certainly get into that. But it was never short by any means. And if he wanted to beef it up, he could. He had a crank ball. He wanted to hit it 30 yards farther, he could. You know, it just, he didn't have the body mass to stabilize that more often. He was 165.
He was 35th.
Wasn't a big guy.
His approach really, in 18 was, in 17, it was 114th. In 18, he was 12th. So a big improvement. Big in 2018, his stats really very clean across the board, and particularly around the green, which I want to talk to you about, and just some of the things that he does there around the green. Rapsodo mobile launch monitor, improve your golf swing today. Pro level launch data in the palm of your hand. It is very accurate, within 2%. Of a $20,000 unit. The Rapsodo MLM app automatically tracks stats and stores video with Shot Tracer, helpful for club gapping and understanding true distances for each club. Rapsodo MLM provides immediate feedback data and creates a better practice environment, not mindlessly hitting balls. Extremely portable, cases about the size of a rangefinder. And you know what? You can use it both indoors and outdoors. I love this launch monitor. It's the Rapsodo mobile launch monitor. Check it out at rapsodo.com, rapsodo.com, rapsodo.com.
Right.
But as we kind of, move the needle forward here a little bit from this swing on 17, and now you look at the one in 2019, which again, some good stats here, stroking off the tee, 24th, approach 54th. I felt Bryson was a better wedge player probably through this stretch as well than what we're seeing now.
Yeah, for sure.
And where he is at the bottom in the approach wedge game.
Right. If we go back a little bit, some key things that happened that were really, to me, important for him and his discovery. And certainly, working with Greg Roscoff at MAT, started understanding end ranges, which means, if I twist, that's an end range. I can't go anymore. So basically, we went to the triangle assembly. He was so excited because we really never talked enough about the triangle assembly and how, everything is put together. It's so fast, so haphazard. And we talk about, the grip has changed a little bit, and we do that with our students and so on. So one of the things that happened right around the beginning, I think it was 2018, that he discovered through his workouts and understanding how he needed to strengthen his end ranges, they realized that, man, I can incorporate that into my triangle assembly or how I, grab a hold of the club and hold on the club in my setup. So the one thing that I have always kind of felt in the setup is about, obviously we talk about balance for sure. And is more on the idea of structure and stability. And so Bryson in his mind, man, if he doesn't feel stable, he's like, off the rails. Why aren't I stable? What's breaking down? That's creating this imbalance in my motion there, where I'm not stable and have no, I'm not stable at all. What structurally has broken down? So that happened in, like I said, 2018 at the end and the year. And he was so excited that he could set up and range and feel really, really stable and feel like he has structure. Now some people look at that and go, he looks really rigid. Well, for him, that's how he, in a sense, relaxes. The more stable and structurally sound he feels or is, the better or more confident he is about executing a motion. So that's in the end, too. That's why you're going to see the club get a little more crossed as well. There were some,
and this is in 19. Now we're starting to see the club.
Yeah. Yes.
As we put the swing up, like 2019, right. We're starting to see the club get a little bit more vertical and kind of point a little more to the right here.
Right, right. He would literally go, hey, I want my hand to be here. You know, I mean, he would go like this. I go, well, how are you going to hit the ball from there? Right. You know, and I get it. It was a feel, you know, but he was trying to feel, he was really trying to sense lockdown, lockdown. And again, that was that journey of discovery. How far can I take that? Which again, I appreciate that so much. I mean, that thing about Bryson, he's never been afraid to go down roads, you know, less traveled. And so, and to test things and try things and, you know, in the heat, in the, I mean, he'll and put it in the heat of battle immediately. And so, you know, you have to appreciate that as a very gifted player that he is.
So this across, just so I'm understanding, is he's just trying to not feel anything there in the right wrist. He's just trying to like feel like almost, you know, like he's folded, he's turning and his right elbow folds, but nothing really changes in his wrist.
I think he went from where it was, everything was, I want my hands in the shaft, you know, on plane, you know, we all saw the one plane motion, to understanding the center of mass and how the center of mass was working, relative to the hand path. And so that's why, you'll see the drop underneath. He went from more, of a straight, you know, I want to hit it straight, want to hit it straight, want to hit it straight. And there, that's another part of the journey as well, to, he was very comfortable hitting a draw. I still obviously is, he wants to hit a draw. And so that became much more comfortable with him. And I always told people, I said, you know, if you actually just shift the angle of the camera, he's still pretty much on quote a one plane. So if you aimed 5 degrees to the right, the camera angle, you'll see the club and hands are going pretty much on that plane. You aim down line. Oh, it's inside and crossed, right? A little bit. And so, you know, so again, in the end, I don't care as long as you feel comfortable and confident, you can execute, right? You know, again, but he went to a, you know, pretty big drawer of the ball, from where he was when he first got out to trying to be super, super straight, you know, cause that was his motivation.
So would you say then, when you look at 2015, which like the club is definitely at the top, it's, let's just call it parallel, right? It's, sure. It's not across the line. To 2019, it starts to get a little bit more across the line. It was kind of through the education of understanding the center of the mass of the club, where he wanted to see the club then kind of fall behind him more in transition versus.
Right. A little bit, but a lot of it was due to closure. Right. And so, you know,
rate of the face.
Yeah. The closure rate of the face.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I would say that was early on, you know, we were hearing that all the time out there on the range, closure rate, how fast it, you know, it is. I would say going into, the second year on tour, literally we were in my place on my circle and I go, well, and since you want to, you know, zero out closure, do you want to do what Dustin does and get the club face perpendicular to the plane? I mean, there's no closure there. He's probably, it's a fact that Dustin probably has the least amount of closure as anybody on tour. And I'm not going there, you know, I'm not going there kind of thing. And so that was a, you know, interesting little journey. You know, but again, it was minimizing. It came into that. I want to minimize that rate. And it was very, you know, it's a difficult thing to measure, by the way, you know, on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So that would almost be possible to measure that, you know, I mean, and again, in the end, he didn't want to go to a, you know, a fade. So it was much more of a hold off draw, you know, in the end. And that's the, you know, the direction he kept going. He felt very comfortable going down that direction.
Yeah, it's interesting because you can see it in his swing. Like when he was younger, you could see the club, like, you know, if we go back to the golf machine, like you'd almost like he'd fold his right elbow,
right,
rotate his left forearm, cock his left wrist, shafts, you know, let's just call it three quarters, pointing slightly left. If I drew a line from the,
right,
the ball baseline, right, through the butt of the club, that whole shaft would be on that line.
Sure.
And then from there, he just kind of comes right back down that line. There wasn't a lot of.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, he worked so hard to keep the hands and the club on plane. I mean, I could do videos of him, or we do a video and it'd be off just a little somewhere. And it's like, no, that can't be. That's not right. Let's fix that. You know, literally a lot of times because of what we would do, we would set up a little station before every round. Like I'd have his V1 camera, Microsoft, you know, Surface Pro set up. And we were the only ones doing this stuff. Right. And then he would watch every single golf swing. And if he'd draw his plane line, and if the club or hand or something was going on with that, he'd fix it. He'd go, I'm not going until I fix it, which there are a lot of times running late to the first tee, you know, kind of thing. But that was, you know, where he was at that time. Mm-hmm. And so now, and then again, once he went to the bigger draw, you know, it all that kind of went away in a sense.
And this bigger draw, is it kind of a combination of kind of understanding that COM and how we want it to kind of fall behind us more, which he was getting as we start seeing the shaft get a little bit more vertical. Now, as we get to 2021, he lengthens it out. It's pointing a little more to the right. This draw was just more powerful too, right? As he was trying now to seek more distance.
Yeah. The distance thing is a whole different world. You know, and so, you know, our view, and even with Como, when Chris kind of came on board, mm-hmm. and we were talking about baselines, you know, let's not deviate too far from baselines. You know, that was something, you know, Chris really wanted to make sure was intact. You know, whether the COVID thing or just he had freedom or more time or whatever to, you know, to go down the road of, okay, I want to be a long drive guy. I really want to hit the ball, you know, far and see how far that can go, you know, and that's kind of where you're at now. And that's why you're seeing, you know, much different thing, big, huge weight shift, center mass movement to the right. I mean, more torques, more ground force, you know, ground forces, rotational. It's everything you could possibly do to try to, you know, to hit the ball farther. That's for sure. Not so much the streamline motion, baseline motion that we saw and that we tried to do from wedge to driver. I mean, if you look at, you know, back in time, you would think the wedge swing and the driver swing were identical, other than the fact that the driver was longer. And so I will say in the USAM, it was one of the only times USAM where literally he was, I would say, quote, zero shifting one plane, hands club, driver to wedge, all of them. It was so perfect. It was unbelievable in my mind. Mm-hmm. It was amazing watching that, you know, and so on every day after the round, during the round, you know, we would do video checks and it was amazing. And that's why Greg Norman would come down and Brad Faxon, they're all trying to figure out what is this golf swing that hits it like he does. And, you know, it was amazing to me how many people thought it was ugly, you know, in my mind, I always thought, God, this thing is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, it's probably because of how good, you know, the ball flights tended to be.
Right.
For sure.
Right. And now, and as we kind of move the needle here to 2021 and, you know, we look at this swing now, we see this, you know, body really winding up. And as you say, shift, meaning loading more kind of into the trail side, not staying perhaps so centered.
Correct. 100%.
Yep. So he's now let's say the pelvis kind of rock a little more into the right heel, yep. A lot more pressure moving into the right side. You can see the left foot's coming up.
Yep.
And now the shaft is definitely more across the line at the top, which when he starts down, you know, that shaft's going to shallow out. And then,
you know, too, I, because we've always believed in a lot of body rotation, hip rotation, shoulder, chest rotation, so on. I think that's in where he's at now, you can definitely see it's very comfortable for him to max that out, you know, and whereas, you know, when he was growing up, there was still a lot of the X factor where it was minimal hip rotation,
right.
Kind of load up and coil and that. I mean, I never went down that road for me, probably me personally, because I have a lot of lower back problems. And so, you know, to me, trying to lock that was an issue. And I certainly, Bryson, like I said, had some back issues early. And so that made it tough. So,
yeah, I mean, you can.
I'm sorry, the gardener just showed up.
You can see the lower body big turn, which I love. I love the rotational freedom, you know, aspect of it. Does the club, as it's now taken this journey from being, you know, kind of more there over there now to being more over there, has, you know, that how that club responding coming down, Has that been a little problematic for him, do you think, perhaps in the iron game? We know the distance has what's transpired there. Although I think he has slowed down a little bit, but we know that, you know, the distance has been incredible transformation and what he did to his body. You can certainly see it in the swing as we're talking about. But taking that club and having it there and now, you know, more over there and what that means to the shaft coming down, from an accuracy standpoint, how do you think he's managed that?
Well, I asked him in December, you know, when he first started this journey, I felt like, hey, this could be really good because you're going to hit a lot more five woods irons off the tee. You know, you're going to hit a super far and don't need necessarily hit a driver because of where, what it might bring into play. So, but I did ask him in December, you know, are you going to start, you know, working on, you know, discovering how you're going to improve your approach game? And he, you know, he said, you know, I will, I'm just not, you know, I'm not ready yet. Mm-hmm. I want to keep going down this road. I want to keep focused on this. You know, I think he felt that was good enough, and obviously it was. I mean, he won Bay Hill you know, he's had an opportunity to win the Open as well. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's not a priority at this point, but I certainly think, yeah, it's definitely affected. I mean, numbers don't lie, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you look at approach numbers, I think some of them are skewed a little bit, but again, he has a lot of 9-iron, 8-iron, you know, wedges into greens now, some out of the rough, maybe more often than I'd like to see. But again, that's all a part of, you know, the process of, you know, I got to go back to figure out. I think a couple of things that are still intact. For sure, he believes in the clock system, which we've always believed that was the best way to control distances. And so, you know, we hated the word feel, all right? I mean, mm-hmm. I instilled that in him early on. I would say he's a big feel guy now, but that, I would say, you know, I hated feel. I go, look, if you're going to rely on feel under an extreme situation that you're unfamiliar with, your feel is going to fail you. It does all the time. So you better rely on something that you know will work, your mechanics, you know, right? Your mechanics produces, feel reproduces, right? I think you probably know that statement from Homer. But in my mind, it's like, look, under extreme pressure, can you go back to your mechanic that you know you trust and execute? And that's how, when I caddy for him, that's how we did it. So the clock system, which means, you know, the simple 9 o'clock, you know, mm-hmm. Okay, let's take the club back 9 o'clock with no wrist cock or radial deviation. You know, make sure your acceleration is the same and not deviating, and whether it was 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, or 10 o'clock. And then he would write those numbers down. He still does that, you know, in my view, enough. No, but again, he still relies on that. You know, if you ever watched when Tim was out there, you'll hear it's a 9:45 swing, 9-iron, mm-hmm. You know, and you'll hear that. And he's amazingly good at that. The only thing I see at this point is that because his the acceleration rates have changed so dramatically, that's why. And again, he's changed the loft. There's some equipment issues there, but the fact that those acceleration rates are not the same as they were, let's say, 3 years ago, you know, until that's really understood, then you're going to see that sporadic, you know, approach game.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, it, you know, overall the approach game isn't too bad. You know, when you look at stroke scan approach 2021, he's 59th. But it's the wedge game where you really see the opportunities approach from 75 to 100. You know, he's 203rd, 50 to 125. Yeah. He's 190. I mean, he's at the bottom with these wedge shots. And and that's kind of what I thought. Like, when I watch it, like, you know, for me, like, I'm in on all this. You know, like the shaft and the shallowing and what he's doing. And I totally get that, but it's like, it's just the touch and maybe the acceleration and not dialing in how hard he's hitting it, the proximity to the hole, right? Like that. Right. And to me, like when I see that, and even just from a tour player in general, I can remember asking Dustin's longtime coach, Alan Terrell, I said, you know, I always know when Dustin's about ready to go, when he's about ready to take off, because his strokes and approach in wedge play starts to tighten up. And that tells me Dustin's practicing. And I was like, am I right or wrong? And he's like, no, you're right.
Look, yeah, you still got to practice, right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I, like I said, I watched at the Open, I watched Bryson hit drivers for three woods as hard as he could for 2 hours, and Dustin's next to him hitting wedges. And so, you know, granted, you know, Bryson had a good U.S. Open other than the last nine. But I think, again, yeah, it takes a lot of work and practice. And, you know, again, I would love to see it more and really improve. I believe it's low hanging fruit. I don't believe it's up, way up in the tree somewhere. But again, you know, it's what he wants. It, look, it's ultimately his choice. And, fortunately he's still a great putter. And so, again, that's another aspect, you know, his work in putting second to none, as far as I'm concerned, he worked hard becoming a great putter. And I admire that more, probably more than anything, you know, cause I don't, he grew up thinking he was a horrible putter. He grew up hearing that in his head. You know, I think he heard it from his family from time to time, you know, that you're a bad putter, you know, and I'm like, no, he's not.
No,
you
he's know? A brilliant he's putter.
A lot of greens. That's all. When you hit a lot of greens, you're going to look like you're not a good putter, you know? And so, I think that's really the, you know, the issue. So I'd like to see it more, but not going to happen yet.
Do you think it's just two parts to this? One, do you think it's just practice? And then you said there might be a couple tweaks with the equipment, but how much of it is just maintaining the training and the speed and the time that that's taking, that's now taking away from, let's go out, let's hit wedges, let's dial in, just like Dustin did. It's almost like Dustin's like, enough's enough. Like,
sure.
Seeing a track man, only number I want to see on my iPad is the carry distance. That's it.
Right.
And here it comes. Here's 80. Here's 100. Here's 120. Here's 140. Here's what I do when I fill in the gaps, and over and over and over. And then you go out there and you start quantifying it. And all of a sudden you're like, this game can get pretty damn easy for guys like Bryson and Dustin, who hit it 325 off the tee, wedge in their hand. I mean, it's just, it's God, it's like frustrating. I watch him on US Open. I'm like, man, like 90 yards and he barely hit the green. Like, what's happening here? I mean,
it's, you have to go like this and it's, you know, again, I it's surprising or not surprising, you know, you know, one of the best players in the world and you see an easy shot and you're going, how did that happen? You know, and it happens obviously, but it's like, okay, it happened again. And so, and again, it's how much you work at it, how much you practice it, all the nuances that go with that. I still believe that, you know, those shots are the hardest shots in golf because of the requirements that are involved. And it takes a lot of practice in different ways, how to read, you know, there's a video going on with, Phil Mickelson talking about his stock 120 shot. With David Faraday and talking about all that. Okay, well, that's fine. But what if I'm on Zoysia and what if I'm into the grain? What if I'm down grain and how much, you know, he goes through it. It's a great video clip about all that's involved in any iron shot, but especially in wedge shots that, you know, that truly matter. Like I said, Bryson's, the clock system is so cool. He used to do it, by the way, he would have it at, he would start at 7, 7:15, 7:30, 7:45, 8, all the way up to 11, believe it or not. With every golf club, foreign all the way through lob, right? And he would have a Rolodex on his bag. How cool is that? He'd look at a shot and he goes, I think that's my 6-iron 930 shot. He'd go through it and go, yep, that's it. You see? Mm-hmm. And it was so cool to do that. And he would do that on every shot. And, you know, he did that his first 2 years on tour, you know, until Tim basically became his Rolodex. And so, you know, it was really cool because, again, as a player, I look at that with kids and stuff, is that when you have stuff like that and you've really committed to it, it's easy to commit and execute it in the heat of battle.
And we're all guilty. Like I, you know, I'll take myself, for example, I do a lot of work with Rapsodo, which is a great little launch monitor that you can put down, put your phone on it. And it's like within 2% of TrackMan. And it's like, you know, it's $500. You don't have to invest $28,000. And I love it for wedges and I'll put it down and I'll just sit there and, you know, and I've just, cause it's so convenient just to put your phone down and, on it. And like, I kind of instinctively know, you know, but like I've gotten more detailed and just the efficiency of wedges. Then you get out there and it's like your confidence level just goes way up. Cause you're like, oh, this is 97 yards. Like I just hit that and quantified it 100 times.
I think one of the things that people miss, acceleration rate, right? And what that is, we certainly understand it a little bit more in putting. We can call it the TikTok drill, same. And I try to, with my players, with Bryson, same thing, try to get that understanding of acceleration and making sure it's constant. You know, some guys are a little more aggressive through impact. Some could actually be more decelerating through impact, and so on. And it's very important to find your own acceleration rate, and I always start with TikTok or same, try to get people to look, hit a little chip, same. And try to understand that that's a baseline or base or starting point that you can do that you could either increase or decrease to find your own acceleration rate. And again, Bryson, at this point, it's changed dramatically because of what he's trying to do on long driving. And I'm sure he'll revisit that and get back to that. And it'll improve. I mean, I have no doubt that that's
what it is. Yeah, it feels like right now, there's perhaps a bit of a reset, and listening to you talk, it's fascinating. I know Chris very well and very smart guy. And I know he's probably trying to get Bryson closer to getting the wedges more dialed in. And these are the opportunities that present itself. And obviously there's some maintenance that has to be maintained with distance, but it's just always fascinating when you start talking like this, how a player has to manage all 14 clubs, right? And where do they put the time? And where do they see the need versus perhaps maybe what the coach is saying? Because what I tell people a lot is like the player pushes back, even though the coach is saying, look, let's go over here and maybe they're like, no, I'm gonna be over here right now and I'm gonna be doing this. So it's an interesting dynamic, and to talk through it. And the purpose of going through this podcast with you is just to get and really any coach is to provide some insight. Some coaches don't like to provide really anything and they don't really give you anything to listen to. Others will give you, some feedback, and here's kind of what we work on and how we work on it. And I think
I just going don't through believe this, that players, I mean, I see it, whether it's on going down to the local driving range or seeing my range at my place, all I ever see is drivers and five irons and six irons all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, I had one of my instructors that works with me. He's trying to get our students to work on their wedging more. And the guy looks at him and students will go, no, I need to really work on my five iron more. It's like, we have a little sign in my tent that says you can't fix stupid, And I mean, I know it's offensive to people, but you know what? It frustrates me. I remember hearing a quote from a Hogan that said he hit 1,000 wedges before breakfast, And so I often tried to find that quote. It has been a mantra for me, since my, second or third year in college. And so, and I'm a big guy, I hit it far. I can hit it a long ways, because I'm old now. But again, I was always known to hit it far. But again, you cannot work hard enough on your scoring clubs, wedging. It's more than chipping. I will tell people, I'm a big believer, if you want to improve your short game, become a better ball striker. If you're a tour player, you're up and down, the best in the world are about 50%. So if you're a college player and you're missing 9 greens, you're already 5 over par before you start the day. So I would, if you're a good, and that's if you actually have a good short game, I would again say to you, look, you need to really spend more time improving your ball striking, spend more time improving how to get better proximities when a 9 iron and an 8 iron and so on. Because then when you miss a green, chances are it'll be an easier up and down. It's not the high flop-a-dopper that you got to hit over a bunker shot that you'll never get up and down.
Yeah. I mean, strokes gain approach, this proximity, it dominates PGA Tour. Now, when you're longer, right, we know there's an advantage there, but you can put all the distance in the world, but if your proximity with the wedges and the nines is not up to par, then you're not going to be maximizing what it is that you've done off of the tee. Right. And there's a balance there. And with Bryson, it's just fascinating. I mean, I love watching him play. I love I love the distance. He's a brilliant putter, and it's like, man, this dude becomes a great wedge player.
Right.
Look out.
Right. And I still, yeah. And I look, again, I'm, I, I never hit it short in my life. And so, but I certainly teach and work with kids that, you know, in their wildest dream will never hit it that far, but become that can become very, very good players.
Yeah.
If they learn how to understand what their strengths are and how to improve those things. I've had, and I know you have too. I've had girls that there's no way they're ever going to hit it 220, right? Mm-hmm. Became very good college players. Why? And they were always in the fairway, you know, big benefit there. You're in the fairway every single time. That makes it a little bit easier. Now, when you do have your wedges or nine irons, you have to become better because you don't have that many of them. Right. And so mm-hmm. every single time, you know, all of a sudden now I'm watching, you know, watching a kid, you know, be able to shoot 6-7 under who again, can't hit it out of their quote shadow. And yet because they become so much better at those scoring clubs that they do have opportunities on, you know, it's amazing how they still can compete. And I still believe that. I know the game has, you know, become crank-a-dank a little bit, but I don't see it quite as much on the LPGA yet, but you know, hopefully we'll see. I don't necessarily want to see equipment limited or anything like that, but mm-hmm. potentially how facilities or golf clubs or, you know, the golf course is set up brings back more strategy in the game. Man, I would love to see that.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, definitely more strategy, but proximity is big. Stroke scan approach. You've got to win there. And when you got that length, if you can win the wedges too, and you're a great putter like he is, like, man, you can just start crushing people.
It starts like you said, and maybe Dustin is more of a, hey, I need that carry distance and whatever.
Yeah.
Look, Dustin's a smart guy. There's no doubt about it that he knows and understand lies and moisture on the ball or wind characteristics and all that. But those are all things that as you become a better player or as a player that you need to consider is that look at the lie and how it is. Is it sitting down? Is it on a tight lie? What kind of grass is it? You know, is there a little water on it? You know, all those kind of things matter in the end. We determined there was 11 or 12 of them, you know, wind factor and how hard and firm the green was and all that kind of stuff that should be considered. And again, I think that's part of mechanics, you know, how, learning a wedge swing or learning a scoring club swing or a baseline swing, obviously got to do it. That's why you've got an instructor. And you need to work hard on that, but there's more mm-hmm. to it than that for sure.
Mike, we could go forever. But this has been fun to kind of, you know, just you look at these swings, they're different and how it's evolved and, you know, just, I think what's fascinating to me is just how the shaft, where it used to point to where it is now, closure rate, I think is interesting. You can certainly see the pivot much more aggressive and alive and how he's trying to hit it hard now, the change of knee flex. And I think really just the evolution of instruction of, you know, there is no resist, it's rotational freedom. And I think that's more freedom on the back, but then the risk of, you know, okay, I get all this distance, my rotational speeds change and what that means to proximity and what it used to be with wedge play and then having to overcome that. And then as a player being able to balance your time management of, okay, where do I be obsessed with where I'm going distance wise? Cause that's fun and sexy. Do I spend more time in dialing in the wedges? There's just so much there to unpack. And I think that's the purpose of, you know, having these pods with the coach is you give them the insight of this is reality. And it's, you know, it's like the purpose of all that is no shot at Bryson or anybody. It's just like, it's insight to, you know, the polarizing figure that he is and your guys' relationship for so many years. I think it's just great content and great discussion. And I can't thank you enough for giving me the time last week and again this week. Shit, we might as well just do part three at some point.
Sure, anytime. Yeah, anytime, right?
Mike Scheid, thanks for joining me on the pod, man.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it, man.
I just want to interrupt this interview real quick and give a shout out to my friends over at Encore Golf. Encore provides some of the most cutting edge technology in a golf ball that I have ever seen. Their team in Buffalo, New York is changing the script of golf technology through their perimeter weighted designs, which offer players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course. With their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show.